Welcome to today's conversation about life and social change in Central Asia. My name is Bermet Talant, and this talk is hosted by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Water is arguably the most important resource in Central Asia. It is vital for agriculture that feeds and provides livelihoods for the region's predominantly rural population. And it is vital for hydropower stations that generate electricity for domestic consumption and export. According to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, temperatures in Central Asia are rising faster than the global average. Scientists predict that the region, which is so dependent on water, will become drier and more parts of it will turn into deserts. Glaciers are melting at unprecedented speed. Over the past 5 years, Central Asian countries have already seen some of the worst droughts, which caused shortages of water for irrigation, hydropower, which in turn was followed by soaring prices on food. And in 2021, the deadliest border conflict between Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan in years started as a water dispute between local residents, although other factors played role too. Today, we'll be talking about social and economic impact that these environmental shifts are already having on local communities and how they can adapt for what's coming in the future. We have with us Shahzoda Alikhanova, a specialist in natural resources management from Uzbekistan, who is now doing her PhD in the UK, and Sher Hashimov, a journalist from Tajikistan. Great to have you both here today. Before we continue, if you have a question or a comment, you can press request in your Twitter mobile app to speak up and we'll bring you in. Or you can send a direct message to @RFERL or reply to a tweet pinned in this space. Sher, I would like to start with you. How is the weather in Dushanbe these days?
Hi, Bermet. Thank you so much for having me on today. Well, it's very hot. It's been over 40 degrees Celsius in Dushanbe this entire week. The entire month of June has been having very unusual weather. Usually doesn't get that hot in Dushanbe. And we also had a couple of weeks of unusual rain, all of which I think points to a changing weather patterns in Dushanbe and around Tajikistan connected to climate change.
Mm-hmm. Has it been like this over the past few years, like early summer being very hot?
No, I mean, Tajikistan does get hot, over 40 degrees. However, all of that happens mostly in July. This is pretty unusual. The change is not that big on paper. It's only a difference of 3, maybe 4 degrees from the usual average in June. However, the actual not on paper effect of it is quite palpable.
Mm-hmm. Shahnoza, so we just heard Cher talking about scorching temperatures in Tajikistan. Similarly, there are reports of temperatures over 40 degrees Celsius in Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan too. Is this going to become a new norm? And what are the other weather patterns and events that signal that climate change is gaining pace in the region?
Hi, Bermet. Yes, the climate is really changing, I guess, in Uzbekistan, because the number of extreme weather events increasing drastically. I'm away from Uzbekistan these days, but it's been very, very hot. When it comes to direct, tangible results of climate change, we can definitely say that the precipitation patterns have changed. So spring was very, very rainy. And summer, again, was extremely hot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other, you mentioned extreme weather events, so it's just
too much rain and a lot of precipitation.
And heat waves. Okay. Yes. Okay. Sher, so what are the effects of climate change that are particular to Tajikistan and how does it affect the lives of Tajik people?
I think the biggest one is the melting of the glaciers. I'm sure you and our listeners know Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan are very reliant on glaciers for irrigation, for electricity production. In Tajikistan alone, 93 to 95% of the country's electricity comes from hydropower. And all of those hydropower plants are based on glacier-fed rivers. However, the glaciers are melting away. Since 1930, in the past 90 years, Tajikistan lost about a third of its glaciers. And according to some calculations, Tajikistan will lose another 30 to 50% of existing glaciers by 2050. And the effect of that can be felt already. Several years in a row, Tajikistan is facing electricity shortages because the country's water reservoirs cannot find enough water to fill up and to produce the usual amount of electricity. We are seeing droughts. We're seeing mudslides connected to, you know, the increased melting of glaciers, which means increased flow of rivers, but very unpredictable flow of rivers. All of these are the clear effects and impacts of climate change.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Kyrgyzstan, we've already seen some terrible mudslides and an increase in mudslides and floods lately. And they actually forced some people to move homes, to move to other countries. Is internal migration caused by this environmental changes an issue in Tajikistan too?
The effects are not that visible yet. However, it is definitely going to be one of the consequences. People from rural regions will be forced to move to urban regions just to have better access to electricity, better access to water, to food systems. There are people migrating from the highlands, from Khorog, from Darvaz, because the weather patterns and water patterns in the highlands are becoming more and more unpredictable. And all of that is going to get only worse, unfortunately.
Yes. As I was preparing for this talk, I was reading the World Bank report released last September, and it forecasts that Central Asia could see as many as 5 million internal climate migrants by 2050, which is a crazy big number. Shahnoza, I will ask you the same question. What is the biggest threat from climate change to Uzbekistan?
I would say that, again, the biggest climate change, not just in Uzbekistan, but across Central Asia, is water resources shortage. Just because we are a downstream country and we are highly dependent on water resources, and Uzbekistan doesn't actually generate water. So water resources are crucial for agricultural production, and I would say farmers that in this case would be the most vulnerable, and they would be those who suffer most, actually, just because drought events increase, the number of drought events increase, and this definitely has its implications on crop yield. And I know that there are different reports saying that crop yields across Central Asia are expected to decrease by 30, even 40% by mid-century. And also, I would say that the frequency of disaster increases in Uzbekistan as well, in terms of the number of landslides, mudslides, just because as I mentioned, precipitation patterns change, and landslides, mudslides mostly occur in the mountainous areas, while drought events and extreme weather events occur in lowlands and desert areas of Uzbekistan.
Sher, you've done quite a bit of reporting on the subject. Do people in Tajikistan link these extreme events, droughts, floods, and mudslides, which are becoming regular, to the global warming?
For the most part, unfortunately, no. There has been some programming in mountainous communities in Tajikistan that ensure that the local populations there are more aware of sort of the larger picture and how the climate change is impacting livelihoods and what they're seeing around them. But however, for the most part, I don't think people in Tajikistan understand the links with climate change, and I don't think they understand how climate change is going to impact electricity production in Tajikistan. Part of it has to do not only with the lack of knowledge, but also with the lack of transparency on the part of the government. Usually when the country's energy systems face water shortage and they are forced to shut down electricity access to certain communities in Tajikistan, the government just tells people that these are system maintenance days and you should gain access to electricity back in a few hours, maybe a few days. But the government never acknowledges the larger systemic issues behind this electricity shortages, which prevents people from understanding how it's all connected to melting glaciers and climate change.
Very interesting. Shahzoda, is that the same in Uzbekistan? What are the public attitudes there?
I'm not quite sure what general public thinks because I have never seen such surveys or reports about public opinion towards climate change, global climate change, or regional climate change, or even local one. But I've seen and observed a number of people who express their opinions towards recognizing global climate change and and connecting it to the RLC catastrophe. You might know that the RLC, three, 4 decades ago, when it still existed, it used to be a local climate mitigating factor. And people recognize these days that due to shortage of water resources and shrinkage of water bodies, they do recognize that climate change definitely has its implications, and they are tangible.
Just a quick reminder to our listeners that if you'd like to ask a question or you would like to share your opinion on the subject that we're discussing today, you can indicate that you want to speak by pressing the button in Twitter Spaces on your mobile app. Just make sure that your mic is on, or you can send a direct message to @RFERL or reply to a tweet pinned in the Spaces. So Central Asian states are among the countries with the lowest carbon footprint. Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan combined contribute about 0.5% of the global carbon emissions. Yet we are facing the worst consequences. So a question to you both. What can local governments and communities do to adapt and prepare for the change in climate? And is there a way to maybe mitigate it?
Let me start maybe on this. Of course, there are measures to mitigate and to adapt to climate change consequences. What the governments can do is to focus on turning economic sectors to be more green or switching to, say, circular economy, which reduces impact on the environment and reduces waste generation, which is also a contributor to global climate change. And also, when it comes to Uzbekistan, for instance, which is the GDP of the country is highly dependent on agricultural produce. So switching to more sustainable agricultural production could be an issue, sorry, a key in addressing this issue.
Okay, so
And
for instance, what would it be like currently Uzbekistan grows cotton, which consumes a lot of water, right? So what
Yes.
would be, could you give us some examples, please?
For instance, well, Uzbekistan has made a lot of effort in reducing the areas under cotton production and switching to less water-intensive crops, which means crops that require less water during the production, which would make farmers use definitely less water, and also switching to drip irrigation system, for example, could be an option. This would help save water. Like there are different options again, in various sectors. For instance, we could urbanization in Central Asia is also growing, in Uzbekistan as well, and we could still make this sustainable by planting. By increasing green areas and planting more trees, because you might know that, for instance, the surfaces, the temperatures of the surfaces with green areas and without green areas sometimes like the difference is almost 10 degrees. I mean, where we have trees in the cities, we have less heat waves. We have more. We kind of contribute to improving the local microclimate. So there are different options, again, based on the sector.
Sure. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, first of all, Shahzoda laid it out perfectly, updating agricultural systems in Central Asia and making them more sustainable, making them more efficient is going to be key. The irrigation systems in many places in Central Asia are very outdated and they require updates. Tree cover, as Shahzoda mentioned, is going to be very important. Dushanbe, the capital of Tajikistan, is undergoing a rapid urban transformation, has been undergoing it for the past 7-8 years. A lot of the old low rises in the city are being torn down, and in their stead, their oldest high rises, glass high rises, there are going up. A lot of trees are being cut down, and all that is just not sustainable in the local climate. And in the face of climate change, this high rises, this glassy towers, they require more cooling. They are just not good for the local climate. And then when you cut down the trees, if you look at the satellite images from just 15, 20 years ago, you can clearly see that the tree cover in Dushanbe has been decreasing, which is exposing people to heat and to the rising temperatures.
Yes, it's a similar problem in Bishkek.
Exactly, and in Tashkent, as far as I know. Tajikistan needs to diversify its energy portfolio. As I already mentioned, up to 95% of the country's electricity comes from hydropower. Unfortunately, our hydropower systems are vulnerable to climate change. So we need to diversify our energy portfolio, bring in solar, maybe start working with Uzbekistan, because Uzbekistan, as far as I understand, produces a lot of electricity using natural gas. So importing electricity from there could be important. On the larger scale, regional cooperation is going to be very important. As water resources decrease in Central Asia, I believe we're going to see a lot of conflicts similar to the one that we're seeing on the border between Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan and north of Tajikistan. A lot of it has to do with the local water resources, and we're going to see more and more of that as climate change starts showing its effects.
Yeah, progresses. So last year, the Kyrgyz president, Sadir Japarov, attended the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow and actually saw it as a very positive move. And I personally would like to see more cooperation between our states, you know, rather than disputes, kind of working together on behalf of the whole region, since we are in it together. What are your thoughts on that?
As I mentioned, regional cooperation is going to be absolute key to ensure that there are agreements in place that, you know, ensure fair, sustainable access to water resources for the entire region, ensuring that energy trade is enabled across regions so that, you know, Tajikistan can make up for its, for the vulnerabilities in its hydropower sector, so that Uzbekistan gets something in exchange. We need to start working together as a region and not this collection of five different states.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I absolutely agree with Sher that regional cooperation is key to addressing our emerging environmental issues, because climate change does not recognize any political boundaries, and we as nations of Central Asia, as residents of Central Asia, will have to face those issues despite our ethnicity or religion or the country we reside, because the issues that these countries are facing are almost the same, and addressing them should be through cooperation and in unity.
Mm-hmm. So a recent study published in the Central Asian Survey Journal highlighted a lack of research on climate change in Central Asia. Do you have any more information on that?
Well, I would say that research in Central Asia, not just on climate change and climate issues, is lacking, but research is, in my personal opinion, is quite underdeveloped, to be honest. As a researcher myself, I quite often have to read through different publications, and I have to do that in English language only. And for instance, local languages, not even to mention Russian language sources, they just do not publish much, or maybe the information is quite outdated from the Soviet times. I do not know the reasons to why this is an issue in Central Asia, just maybe because we had some brain drain that happened like several decades ago, right after the collapse of the Soviet Union, or maybe there's difficulty in equipping academic institutions or attracting researchers to them. Maybe there's an issue with funding and financing. Yes, but I would agree with the statement that research needs to be developed.
Mm-hmm. And local research, right? That's what you mean.
Local research and all across Central Asia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cher, do you have an opinion on that?
Yes, Shahzoda mentioned earlier, she and neither have I seen any sort of large-scale public surveys about what the public in Central Asia thinks about climate change. And that's actually one of the larger holes that was identified in that paper that you're talking about, one of the holes in the scholarship on Central Asia. We don't have any large-scale studies about the public perception of climate change, of the risks, of any links that public sees between climate change and you know, the changing landscape in Central Asia. And we urgently need to address these issues. And I think all of that, this lack of scholarship about climate change in Central Asia, just shows how this this focus on securitization of Central Asia, on Afghanistan, on radical Islam, there was just too much focus in scholarship on Central Asia on those issues. And it's kind of coming back to bite us in the butt, so to speak, because so much of the scholarship has been dedicated to this sometimes overblown issues of radicalization that we haven't been focusing on things that are much larger and much harder to control.
Mm-hmm, like climate change. So Shahzoda, when we talked with you before, you mentioned kind of a shortage of scientists. Like the existing, I mean, at least in Kyrgyzstan, the existing scientific core are kind of aging Soviet era scientists, and young people are either like rarely have opportunities or are not interested. What sparked your interest in environmental science, and what was your path like?
Are you interested in knowing my background or what made me decide towards research, or
yes, but why this, okay. Why how did you become interested in environment and environmental science and natural resources?
Well, I think just like any other person who gets interested in any other sector, I think it was just passion that drives me forward. It's passion for my profession and passion for people and passion for conservation. I was, when I was like 16 or 17 years old, I graduated from, I finished school when I was 16, and I started doing my bachelor's in economics of engineering, which is completely different field, and it's not related to environmental biodiversity at all. But as I grew up and started noticing things and the disaster that the country and the population of the region of the Aral Sea were facing, my interest was growing in this sector. And you might know that it's quite difficult, if not to say impossible, to change direction in Uzbekistan. For instance, if you started economics, then you have to finish it. You cannot just switch to another sector. So the only option for me was to study abroad and completely changed my background, educational background.
So what's your research in?
My current research is on the RLC area on identifying nature-based solutions to improve the environment and the lives of the population in the RLC region in Uzbekistan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cher, are you planning to do more reporting on climate change in Tajikistan?
Absolutely, and we're going to see more and more effects of climate change, and we're going to see how the migration to urban areas is going to grow, and there's going to be more strain on food systems, and I'm definitely interested in covering those issues. Sort of similar to Shahzoda, I studied public administration and public policy in the U.S. for my master's degrees. However, I was always interested in energy shortages in Tajikistan because when I was growing up in Tajikistan in the 90s, we constantly faced electricity cuts, especially in the winter, 2 or 3 months at a time when you would have only a few hours of electricity a day. And so ever since I was a kid, I wanted to know how our energy systems work, which is why I focused on energy systems in my public policy program, which now informs my reporting of climate change in Tajikistan and Central Asia.
Mm-hmm. I believe we have a person who wants to speak up. Just a second. This is Jan Murtazashvili. Jan, are you with us?
Yeah, this is such a great discussion, and I'm so grateful that you're hosting it because it's so important. And I just wanted to share a comment, an observation, and maybe just a question based on this issue of research on climate change. And, you know, I could be wrong about this, but, you know, over the years, I've dealt with a lot of engineers and scientists. Even like 25 years ago, there were scientists I was working with in Uzbekistan who were developing solar panels. And this was the government was investing in this in like the State Committee for Science and Technology. And I feel like the local scientific community, like the STEM science community, is aware of the issues. They're measuring these issues. But this community has never been trained to communicate this in terms of like public policy. I don't think there are any environmental policy programs in the region. Cher, you know, you mentioned that you have a master's degree in public policy and public administration, and there's just so few of these programs. And I think one of the key issues is that the ability to communicate like the scientific knowledge into policy, one of the things that's really missing is this policy education, which could be a bridge between the scientists and the scientific knowledge that does exist, and then the policy community that can sort of interpret this and communicate it. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, or whether I'm wrong in my observation.
Who wants to take this question?
I know. I think I agree. Even from a recent example, and Jen, it's such a pleasure to have you here with us in this space. Observation from my recent travels around Tajikistan. So every time I come to Tajikistan, I like to spend as much time in the mountains as I can, hiking, backpacking. A couple of valleys that I like to visit, they have meteo stations there. And they're staffed by a couple of men from the Soviet times. Those couple of guys, they have been at those media stations for 30, 40 years, you know, leftovers from the Soviet scientific community. And they're there because they're there for so long because, first of all, since the Soviet Union fell apart, there hasn't been enough educational training to sort of bring up a new, younger generation of scientists who could do this kind of work that these guys are doing in those media stations. And another reason is that because, through their 30, 40 years of being at those media stations, they sort of develop what Jen is talking about. They not only have been trained as scientists to like collect the data on the changing weather patterns, on the changing glacier cover, but also through 30, 40 years of working in that field, they developed this ability to communicate their findings in sort of this plain language to politicians, to technocrats in development organizations, to local communities. You know, they're seen by local communities as people who actually understand what's happening with their rivers, with their with their like places where their sheep can find grass and things like that. But unfortunately, there are no people like that in Tajikistan who have the scientific understanding, but also this ability to relate their findings to local communities in a simple language, and also relate their findings to politicians, to NGOs, so that they can act on policy together.
So the scientific community is very much disconnected from population and politicians.
Disconnected, understaffed, underfunded. You know, it's obviously an issue connected to brain drain. It's an issue connected to, lack of economic development and lack of revenue on the part of the government that would allow the government to invest in scientific institutions. There's obviously issues of, suppression of scientific research in Tajikistan. There's a lot mixed in this issue.
I think this is also partly an implication of economic crisis that Central Asian countries had to face. Like 30 years ago, right after the collapse of the Soviet Union, you might know that Soviet Union heavily funded research and development. And while at the beginning of the 1990s, Central Asian governments were just neglecting science just because there were not enough resources to find them. And suddenly this sector turned to be not the most lucrative one, which is why I believe most scientists even abandoned the sector and switched to quite different professions just to make their, as a source of income, which is why for a couple of decades even, science was quite underdeveloped. Particularly in Uzbekistan and some other Central Asian countries. But I think that the situation is gradually improving these days. And I've seen quite a few trainings where scientists were trained and taught how to transfer their knowledge to policymakers through involvement in different strategies, country strategies, development plans and development strategies. But there's always room for improvement, of course.
Okay. I think we are a little bit short on time. And since we don't have any more questions, we're going to wrap this conversation up. Thanks to our guests. I remind that today we had Shahzoda Alihanova from Uzbekistan and Sher Hashimov from Tajikistan. Thanks to our listeners and thanks to RFRL for hosting it. We will return with a new talk on July 14th. And your feedback is very important to us. Please help us improve this series by sending your suggestions or ideas for topics you'd like to hear about. You can DM me or at RFRL. Have a good day.